Welcome to Literary Quest, a podcast hosted by us, Vicky and Marissa, where we discuss our favorite in fantasy fiction and hopefully can direct you in your quest to find your next great read.
Welcome to Literary Quest. This week, we are discussing The Serpent and the Wings of Night by Carissa Broadbent. I'll be reviewing characters, and then Marissa will pick up with our plot. Our main female lead is Oriah. She was found as a child in a human city by Vincent, the king of the Nightborn. Rather than kill her, he adopted her as his daughter. Her exact age is unknown, but she's most likely early to mid-20s. She grew up being trained to defend herself, but also to be aware that she is never safe. Fear is second nature to her, but despite this, she is fierce and hunts vampires that stray into the human district. Over the years, she developed a friendship with Alana, a human who voluntarily provides blood to vampires. Oriah does not want to spend the rest of her life fearful and prey in a kingdom full of predators, so at Vincent's suggestion, she decides to enter the Qajari. The Qajari is a tournament that happens once a century. It is brutal, but the winner is granted a wish/gift from the goddess Nyaxia. Oriah plans to win and to ask for to form a heart bond with her father so that they can share power. We have Vincent. He's the king of the Nightborn. He rose to power after winning a previous Qajari. After his win, he slaughtered his family and anyone that could challenge him. He also created and ended a war that resulted in the deaths of hundreds of thousands of vampires and humans. He is not sentimental, and while he cares deeply for Oriah, he has never told her he loves her. He does affectionately refer to her as Little Serpent. He refuses to make her a vampire, as only a third of people survive it. Then we have Rain, the main male lead and romantic interest. He is a Rishan vampire, and therefore automatically Vincent's enemy. He is several centuries old and is a turned vampire, meaning that he was once human. He has a rather tragic backstory. He was enslaved by the vampire who turned him, and the vampire who turned him was the king. He helped to overthrow him, and after that, he traveled the world as best that he could. He came to the Qajari with his friend Nisha, who is also a turned vampire, and she has fire powers. His goal is to reclaim the throne and save the innocent vampires and humans from Vincent. In terms of location, the book takes place mainly in the Moon Palace, which is a place reserved solely for the Qajari.
So Oriah, the adopted daughter of the king of the Hiage vampires in the Nightborn Kingdom, who is named Vincent, has trained for her entire life working with her father, Vincent, to prepare for the Qajari, the tournament honoring their goddess Nyaxia. At the end of the tournament, Nyaxia grants the victor a gift, and Oriah is banking on becoming a winner, not just so that she can be granted the immortality of a vampire, but through it, be able to form a heart bond with her father so that they can share power. And so the time for the tournament arrives, and Oriah survives the first night in a palace full of vampires. After a big feast to honor Nyaxia, the trials in the tournament begin, and Oriah survives the first trial with the help of a big auburn-haired vampire named Rain, who she met on her first night in the castle or in the palace. And they take down their first obstacle in the tournament together. After the trial, Rain approaches Oriah about allying with each other until after the third trial, where they will have to work in teams to survive the third trial. And Oriah declines his help. However, surviving as an injured human among vampires is difficult, and she was injured in that first trial. And so she's able to get a healing potion to help with some of her wounds from her father, but it's not enough. And so Oriah is attacked by a bloodborne vampire in bloodlust, and she nearly dies defending herself. She is able to drag herself to Rain's quarters, which he shares with his friend Misha, and they come to an agreement about being allies. They eventually learn to work together, although it is challenging for both Oriah and Rain to get there. And Araya works with Misha to cultivate some of her magic ability for creating Nightfire. Araya, Misha, and Rain make it through the second trial, but in an attack on the Moon Palace, Misha is severely wounded and Rain is taken away for questioning slash torturing, as he is a Roshan vampire and Roshan rebels are suspected of having caused the attack. Araya meets with her father, Vincent, after Rain is taken, and she asks him to leave Rain intact so that she will still have an ally for the third trial. And her father has been under quite a bit of stress recently because tensions have always been pretty high between the Hiage vampires and the Roshan vampires, but especially since Vincent overthrew the Roshan king 200 years ago when he won the Qajari. However, they have been a lot worse recently. And so Araya knows something's wrong, but doesn't know what. And then she begins to doubt her father when Rain is returned shortly before the third trial with his back flayed open after having been tortured. Araya stitches him back up and she makes arrangements for Misha to be pardoned from competing from the trials because she is so wounded. And so the third trial arrives, and Araya and Rain survive. And after it, they grow closer in Misha's absence. They continue to train together. And though her relationship with her father becomes more and more strained, she becomes closer and closer to Rain. And so Araya and Rain's attraction to each other eventually comes to a head after the fourth trial when they can no longer deny their desire for each other. But Araya's kingdom is on the verge of collapse, and the fifth trial, which should take place 3 or 4 weeks after the fourth, takes place, is set to take place the next night. And in that trial, the only winner is the one who survives. And so the day of the trial arrives. Will Araya kill Rain and claim Nyaxia's gift? Or will he kill her? Or will neither of them survive? Who knows? Spoilers abound.
So, how did you like this book?
I really liked this book. I felt like it was kind of like the Hunger Games, but with adults and vampires and sex, which I appreciated because I didn't actually like the Hunger Games books, but I really like this book because there's adults. And even though there wasn't a ton of smut in this book, like we really only had one pretty solid chapter where there was sex, I still feel like the story was fantastic, and I didn't really find myself missing the smut a lot. Like the story was paced really well. The action was awesome. There was a lot of like fighting and murdering and things, and I felt like the fight scenes were written really well, and the trials were great, and I really enjoyed the mythology of like Nyaxia's story and how it was integrated into the trials. Overall, I really enjoyed this story. What did you think?
I really liked it too. This is actually my second read of it. I read it earlier in the year, I guess. The second one wasn't out when I read it. But yes, I really enjoyed this. I love the enemies to lovers trope in this. I also really liked it. It was pretty unique for the story. You know, like it was definitely like kind of reminiscent of some Hunger Games sort of thing, but overall I felt that it was relatively unique story. And I really liked how the trials were based on Nyaxia's history and her own trials, I guess, into becoming the goddess that she is now.
Yeah. I agree. I think it would be cool to have an origin story for Nyaxia, right? Because we get told part of the story through the trials, her rise to power, fighting through like monsters, making her way through the underworld, her lover being taken from her and murdered, and then her like raining down hell on the people who took him from her, and her like fully coming into her power. I feel like it would give Queen of the Damned vibes, maybe. I don't know. I just think it would be a really great like origin story.
I agree completely with that. I would love to see that.
I love it anytime we have a story where they're able to work in some mythology. I feel like that just gives so much, I don't know, I feel like it really enmeshes me in the story. I really appreciate things like that.
Yeah, I think one of the reasons maybe why it's so significant, I suppose, is because that's hard to do, come up with an entire new mythology sort of thing. So I feel like when there is a new unique sort of mythology that's in there, the author has really developed the world really well in order to be able to do that.
Yeah,
Least that's what I think.
I agree. And then I think about authors like Tolkien, who created an entire language and hi history for their characters, and am just awed by the imaginative capability that some folks have. Yeah.
And he can spend 40 pages describing a tree. So
Yeah. And
that's
I'll read it.
oh, yeah.
I will read it and maybe even develop a kink for it.
Oh my Do we need to be careful about you in the woods now,
Oh,
Marissa?
you might. I mean, if you see me talking to any like sentient trees, you might just say something to me like, "Hey, don't go after that wood."
I don't know. I kind of feel like I would encourage that though, and then you'd have to report back to me
Okay.
how
Okay.
that went.
So I really enjoyed Vincent's early scenes with Oriah, which it instantly made me concerned that it was not going to end well, because just based on how books tend to go, if we start out with really good things in the beginning, we don't end with them. So I really enjoyed his story, or his early interactions with her, and was immediately concerned, rightfully so, it seems. I just love stories where we have a father figure that actually loves their child and is interested in them and kind to them and supports them and helps them. And yeah, Vincent's really hard because he's the king of the vampires, but he's still sweet and kind and thoughtful in the way that he is able to be as a king and over 200-year-old vampire to a human girl that he
Yeah.
found in a field.
He does his best as he can.
He does his best. Like, it just warms the shit out of my heart when dads are sweet to their kids. I don't know.
Well, in the interludes too, like the early ones where he it's mentioned like, oh, she's kind of in a corner and he's just sitting there, not moving, basically, like reminds me of a cat or a
Yeah.
kitten, you know, being scared and they curl up in a corner. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just, oh, it's great. And then when they have to make, she has to make an offering to Nyaxia to enter the trial. And so he helps her with that. He cuts her hand because they have to make a blood offering. And he says that, so I give you Oriah of the Nightborn. She is the daughter my heart gave me. Just as my heart made me your son, her presence in the Qajari is the greatest gift I will ever offer you, save perhaps for her victory. I just felt so much. I mean, it's just really sweet and like heartfelt and great.
It really was. And I feel like he truly believed in her too.
Yeah, I felt like he, but he had to have. There is no, because the alternative to this was to risk turning her, and 2/3 of the people who do that die. So it's either 1 in 3 chance of her living or this. And he supported her in doing this and wouldn't turn her.
Yeah.
So he at least felt like her chances were greater than 33%
Well,
at winning.
as we learn later on, though, one of the reasons, because her wish, right, is to become his, I want to say Coruscant, but I know that's not it.
Coriate, I think.
That.
Yeah. Heart bond. Form a
Yes.
heart bond with her.
Which would make it impossible for her to do anything against him.
Right.
So there's that. And if he
Yeah.
turned her, she would be able to.
Yeah. So probably some self-preservation things there. But and yes, I get that. But also, we know that he loves her, and he, and the expectation would be if he did turn her, she did become a vampire. Like, it's pretty common for people to murder their children in this world if they feel threatened by them. And so this kind of takes that out for he doesn't have to put himself through murdering his child. He doesn't have to put her through that either, or disabling her to the point that she's not able to function, like Ibrahim, one of the other vampires that enters this competition. So yes, there's some self-preservation and selfish motivation type of mo things that are going on with him encouraging her to do this. But he also says to her, like, you don't have to do this. I'm not sure if I ever told you, but you don't have to do this if you don't want to. So she could still just be human. Like, he's not forcing her. It would be great if she could be a little less, you know, fragile. But I mean, you feel like you just get the vibe that he just genuinely cares for her and has done everything that he could to prepare her to set her up for success with this.
I agree. And I
And
think,
he,
oh, go
oh,
ahead.
go ahead. No.
Well, no, keep going. You were talking about Vincent, so keep going. I was going
Yeah,
to.
I also just really love that he calls her a little serpent and that he's done that since he found her.
It's so cute
I
because she
think
bit
that
his
that's so
finger.
cute.
It was.
Yes, she bit his finger. Well, serpents are interesting, right? Because you don't always know what you're working with. They hide, and you don't always see the threat until they've bitten you. And I feel like that this character kind of gives that vibe, particularly to the vampires that she kills in the city, right? They don't really see her coming. They underestimate her because she's human, but she still has teeth. Very sharp swords.
I do feel that she can be, but see, so it's hard. So there's this like zone where is it like, is she being too pessimistic about her, like herself and her strength, or is she just being realistic, right? So,
Right.
because I think she's pretty hard on herself. I feel like she's pretty hard on herself about
Yeah.
being human. And to some extent, yes, you're human in a world full of vampires who want to eat you, and you are not fast the way they are. You are not as strong as they are. They have the upper hand on you. But she also does have other things that make her dangerous in her own way.
Right.
And yeah, I feel like just sometimes she kind of lost sight of that a
Yeah.
little bit. But.
Yeah. She gets a little maybe too focused on the fact that she's not a vampire and forgets the other things that she has.
Exactly.
Right? Just because you're not a vamp, you're human, doesn't mean that you're weak or incapable. I mean, she kicks ass, does a lot of murdering in this story.
Yeah, she's great.
Clearly is very capable, but I agree, it's almost like she like it's still not good enough because she's not good enough, right? She's a human, which is inherently seen as like a flaw and a failure
Right.
because she lives among vampires. Yeah, I get that. And I think part of that's probably just a function of the way that she was raised, because Vincent, in an effort to keep her safe and alive in a castle full of people who want to eat her, basically taught her to be untrusting and scared of everything all the time, which is a terrible way to live, but also a really hard way to live. If you're constantly expecting people to murder you, like the hypervigilance, and being aware of your weaknesses all the time, but also scanning every situation for threats, that's hard. And so I like, from a staying alive perspective, it's probably necessary, but translates to maybe her not really believing in herself the way that she should, and certainly being harder on herself than is fair.
And I think so very, very early on, he tells her that he is the only one she can trust and the only one she's ever truly safe with. Which, good lesson as a kid. Maybe as you grow, there's a little bit more wiggle room, I suppose.
I mean, it's not really great for any relationship she might want to have in the future.
So, and that comes up quite a few times where, Rain tells her you're safe, or like you can trust me or something. And she's just like, nope, I can't. Not at all. All of your actions have shown me that you definitely, that I definitely can trust you, but nope. So.
I just think she was put in a really difficult situation as a child. And because of being human and being so vulnerable and clearly having a very protective father, that kind of didn't set her up for success with any other relationship with any other people.
Yeah, like friends, can't trust them. Lovers, can't trust them.
You might have to actually murder them. So
Yeah, that was
that was pretty rough.
that was
She so like I get it. I mean, yeah, I get it. I also think it's hard from Oriah's perspective, even with the relationship that she has with Vincent, to feel like a secure attachment. So I started thinking like, oh, maybe this character has some attachment issues because it kind of gave the vibe that Vincent's love almost felt conditional based on whether or not she pleased him, or whether he was in king mode versus father mode, right? And so that's sad. Like that's you shouldn't ha question like if your parent is still gonna love you based on whether they're being the king or your father. Like one of them is your job. So she was just like a child who wanted to be loved and accepted by their parent, even if she's human. And I feel like there are incidences that we see where she pushes back at him and he goes to king mode and gets pretty pissy and she feels like she has to shrink herself a little bit. Or she kind of struggles with standing up for herself in some of those situations up until pretty close to the end. And so I love for her that we see her have this moment. It's like a moment of like coming into her own, really, when near the end of the book, she does finally start pushing back at the things that Vincent's saying. And she tells him that she's disappointed in him and that she's ashamed of him. And it doesn't go well.
No, it does not. Although I don't think that conversation would go well with anyone, but it goes especially badly
Really bad.
with him. So, yeah.
But I like for her that she's finally, like, by the time we get to the end of the book, and part of this is because of the interactions that she's had with Rain, but also some of the confidence that she's found in herself, that she is able to push back at the things that he's saying. She's not just the human.
And I think also this tournament was good for her and Wade too, because she has been so like secluded,
Yeah.
I
I was
guess.
going to say sheltered, but secluded is a good one too. Because
Yeah.
she's not really been sheltered, but she hasn't really been exposed.
Right. Yeah. So she's been kind of secluded from everything. So this is one of her, like, I don't want to say first, but one of her more intense interactions, I guess, with other types of vampires, just other like people in general, sort of, like that. Because it's even mentioned that, like, Vincent would very rarely take her to any events or anything like that because, didn't want her getting murdered, sort of thing. So.
When I feel like with that, we have to acknowledge that because of the way that she was raised, she was probably pretty lonely too. It seems like that would be a really lonely existence. Not just because she's secluded, but also because she's not like dead enough to be a vampire. But she really lacks a connection to the human world beyond being their secret savior. She's been so isolated, and she has Alana, her friend. And she doesn't really like have friends.
That's tough. I'm glad she had at least one human friend.
Yeah.
Yep.
No, but then she dies, and it's terrible.
Really terribly.
So bad.
Oh.
I hated that for her because she can pick her voice out, Alana's, so she gets the Moon Palace and can pick Alana's voice, her screams out amongst all of the other screams. That is terrible. She goes to find her, and the house keeps changing shape so that she can't get to her. This is terrible.
I know, and then when she finally does find her, it's really gruesome.
Yeah.
I think it's mentioned that they don't really look like bodies anymore. She's missing most of her face. Like,
Yeah.
oh,
Yeah.
that's just awful.
Pretty bad.
And I think we have to see a much more violent version or animalistic version, I suppose, of vampires in this than we have in other vampire romance books. In general, I guess because they're supposed to, like, a lot of these are vampire romances, so they're trying to make the
Yeah.
vampires look a little not like,
Sexy.
yeah, completely
Sexy vampires.
bloodthirsty
Yeah.
people who tear humans apart.
Yeah. Yeah. These aren't your sexy vampires.
No, these are your Buffy vampires.
She is able to salvage this purple, I think it's purple, scarf from Alana's body. And that comes into play later in the story. The house creates a dress made of the same like fabric or similar color fabric for her. And I think that's a nice way to kind of honor Alana, even though the house really, or I guess it's Nyaxia. I don't know what, I don't know if she embodies this palace or what, but whatever. Maybe a nice way to kind of say, maybe I'm sorry that I killed your friend. I don't think it's a sentient palace. I don't know. It is a nice way to kind of bring back her friendship with Alana later on in the story.
And I also think so. She had given her a colorful scarf, or had given Oriah like colorful trinkets, I think, over the years. And so, and Oriah never wore them because it never, she didn't want anything to bring attention to her. And so now the palace, house, goddess, whatever is doing it, is now giving her something that will, that is bright, that will stand out.
Right.
So we're sort of seeing this. I don't want to say evolution because she's kind of being forced into it,
Yeah.
but you know, we're seeing
Yeah.
it all kind of tie in, I guess.
Yeah. And then hilariously, in that scene, her father sees her and is like, "Are you sure this dress is a good idea?" He's so used to seeing her hidden and actively hiding her. She's like, "Yep." No comment about how she didn't have a choice. The house hid the rest of her clothes. She didn't have a choice but to wear this dress. She just goes with it. When they get to their first challenge and they're being attacked by these terrifying demons, my first thought when I read that was like, I would absolutely be dead.
Oh, yes.
There is no way I would survive this.
I would not survive the first night in the Moon Palace, and I like she gets there though. And like the first thing she does is cut herself. And it's like you
Very
just
human
got
thing
there.
to
It's like you just woke up.
do.
Just immediate cut yourself. All right.
Yeah.
But yeah, I probably would not have made it through the first night. I wouldn't have made it to the first tournament.
No. No. And encounters Rain her first night there. He grabs a hold of her when she's trying to find Alana and says, you know, they're already dead.
And then
Yeah.
she stabs him in the thigh.
She does. So hot. Oh, man.
Love it.
Blasters. Yeah. And then he kind of helps her the second night when they have a feast and she has murdered the vampire who killed Alana. And that vampire's brother is super pissed. And Rain just kind of murders him with magic.
Yep.
Yeah. So they start off, you know, a little shaky. They work together in the first trial. He offers her an allyship, and bless her heart, I guess she thought she would find some better options to partner with for the future challenge, the third challenge where they have to have a partner. I really don't know what she was expecting.
I think she was gonna just wait until it got closer to the third challenge and then just pair up with somebody who didn't. That's kind of in my head
That's a
what she was
bad
doing. It
strategy.
is a bad strategy, but I think that may have been her strategy. Just pair up with somebody else who doesn't have a partner.
It's not the best, not the best strategy. But she eventually has to choose to ally with Rain because she gets attacked by another vampire and is almost dying. So shows up at his door bleeding to death, and they save her. She wakes up, and I don't know, I just kind of imagined like when you wake up and there's like a cat or a puppy in your face, just like so excited to see you.
Oh yeah, Misha.
I definitely get that vibe from Misha.
Yes.
Excited puppy. She's so cute. I loved her.
She was very positive.
She was
She
super
was a good
positive,
balance.
very encouraging. And they were both just so pleased with themselves when they presented Oriah with the bloodborne vampire's head.
I love that
Just
so
super proud.
much.
And she was just so unimpressed.
Like, I just everything about that made me laugh because I highlighted it and I was like, this is such like a vampire fae sort of thing to do. To present like the head of the enemy and be like, look what I got you. Don't you like your present? And then when she was like, no, what was it that he said? He's like, well, you're hard to please or something like
Rude.
Right?
You
It's a
could at
gift.
least
Same thing.
pretend.
Yeah, just say thank you. Like, I love it. Thanks.
I love this.
Thank you so much.
Put it with my other ones.
Do you have the receipt? I have a gift receipt.
Oh, also, Rain is a ginger. Like a
I
very dark auburn, it sounds like.
yes, I
But
had
it's still red.
yes, it's a little bit of red. It sounds like okay. So his hair as described as being dark red, nearly black. But later on, it's also described as having like a red sheen to it. And I have trouble picturing that in my head.
It's like a, it's auburn. It's like an auburn, I think.
I looked up.
What
Yes.
did you Google search for this? Dark red, nearly black hair.
No, I Googled fan art.
Oh,
Same.
okay.
And I ended up with a lot of ones where he's like bright red or just
That's
black.
not it. Oh,
No.
gosh. Somebody needs
So,
to find the in-between.
yes. And the author posted one on her Facebook page where he has it looks black. I don't see the red in it. Now, it's also possible, like sometimes tones and stuff on your computer or your phone messes with the color or whatever. So maybe it was that, but I had a hard time picturing that, and then when I did look for the fan art, I was like, this is doesn't seem right.
I have seen, this is unrelated, but I have seen like no fan art for Fourth Wing, and I'm really disappointed.
What is that?
Like, where is it? What are y'all artists? I need some stuff for like my mind palace. I feel like there's so much art for so many other series, and I have seen, for as popular as that book was, I've seen no fan art.
I agree. I think I even looked some up too for
Yeah.
it, and there just wasn't a lot there. And I don't
Oh.
know why, because I mean, like, tons of. There's so many for other series. I mean, this had it, and this. I don't think this was as popular. I mean, maybe it was. I don't know. As popular as Fourth Wing, but I mean, there's fan art for this.
Yeah. I had a really hard time picturing Vincent, and I'm gonna blame the Twilight movies because they have kind of ruined my life.
Okay.
Anytime I picture an elder vampire, so not a fresh face vampire, but one that's been around the block a few times, I picture Michael Sheen as Arrow. And I love Michael Sheen and I think he's fantastic, but I don't love him as Arrow, the main vampire guy in the vampire government thing in this series of movies. And so anytime I read about an elder vampire, that's who I picture. And it ruins it for me because Vincent doesn't even have dark hair. He's a blonde. I was reading this whole time. I was picturing Arrow from the vamp whatever Twilight movies. And then I got to one point and she's talking about his blonde hair. And I was like, are you freaking kidding me? He's a blonde.
You gotta readjust. Readjust your
That's
brain.
not what he looks like. He looks like Michael Sheen, which is terrible.
I've only seen. Have I seen those movies? I think I've seen them, but I think only once. So the image has not been imprinted on my brain like that.
Yeah, well, stuck in mine. I wish that I was thinking like, who is the hot vampire and the vampire in the Sukey Stackhouse books?
Really?
Alexander Skarsgård,
Oh, Alexander Skarsgård.
Vampire Eric. Why couldn't that be it? Why can't Vampire Eric be who I picture?
Yeah, that should definitely be your reference,
He
because
should be. He's blonde and hot.
I don't understand the people who pick Bill. But
No.
anyway, that's a sidetrack. But yes, that is definitely probably
A better one for sure.
yes. Definitely a better reference point, though you could use it when you read about Septimus. What's his name?
Septimus, yeah.
Yeah,
The
Septimus. He is
print.
also blonde.
Oh, are you for real? Oh
I am for real.
my
It
gosh.
was on her Facebook page, and more fan art being like, and the her comment was, "It's come to my attention that some people think that he's not attractive, but here's proof that he is," and posted some fan art of him, and he's blonde.
Why did I think he wasn't attractive? Because I totally did not. I was thinking, I was picturing some crusty middle-aged vampire who was not blonde. He was bald. I pictured a bald guy. What?
What?
I don't know. I don't know. I was just, the description of him, he's like in a hooded thing. So that
That's
automatically made
true.
me think, oh, he's dressed like a monk.
Okay. That makes
Bald.
sense.
Got a box of cigarillo.
I can't
Pilfering
really
some Swisher
judge.
sweets on the street.
I can't really judge. My first read of The Throne of Glass, I thought she was a redhead whole time. So,
Yeah.
I get it.
So I know that these tournament things are to honor their goddess, but their goddess is pretty terrible. Or maybe it's just the minute, I don't know. I don't know who designs the trials, but whoever designs the trials sucks. Because in the first one, they use demons that that are the same as like the bloodborne vampires turn into, which has to be really triggering for the bloodborne vampires. Right? And then in the second one, they sacrifice humans. I forget what happens in the third one. I think they just murder large beasts. But the
Yeah,
fourth one takes place. Is it that?
that was one where they had to mind share, like they shared their mind.
Oh yeah. Yes.
And yeah.
Yeah. So fighting animals. The fourth one takes place on the grounds of Salinae, which is where Oriya was born. And super triggering event because suddenly Rain looks around and he's like, oh God, there used to be 500,000 people that lived here. And your dad, Vincent, has just raised the entire city to the ground. But we got to finish this trial, folks. And then the fifth one features reanimated corpses of their dead competitors. This sounds like a bad time.
But at
I
least
don't know who
they're
designed the
recycling.
trial. Okay. All right.
Just trying to look on the bright side.
Okay. All righty. I see you. All I'm saying is, it sounds like a shit time. I wouldn't want to do it.
And they change like every year,
Yeah.
or well, every century, I guess.
Yeah.
Every event. They change for each tournament. So we talked a little bit about how she doesn't trust anyone, but she's so even after allying with Rain, she does not trust him, right? And at one point, he's reaching for something, and she assumes that he's gonna attack her. So she hits him first, and he's just like, "What the fuck? I was reaching for that." Like, it was just those first couple of interactions I found were kind of funny because she's just so like, just does not trust them at all. And poor Rain is just like, and to hold it together.
She, just like really took Vincent's advice and ran with it. I think it's interesting that his voice is the one that she hears in her head too, when it comes to making, like, when she, her inner critic is his voice, her inner thing giving her advice is his voice. She's just really ingrained Vincent's voice into her head. I think it, she's probably doing the best that she can with having been told her entire life that Vincent's the only person that she can trust. So, like, I get it. And if I were a vampire and I wanted to lull someone into a false sense of security so I could murder them later on, take out the competition, I would probably try to get someone to trust me too. So I think it's probably smart that she's so on guard, but it certainly does impede her ability to make friends.
Yes, it does. She has lots of acquaintances.
They do, things get better. Like, they become friends. She, he Rain pushes her too hard one day, and she kind of launches him out of a window. And I mean, they start off a little bit rough, but eventually he like sees her murdering vampires in the city, and he's like, "Oh, I too enjoy murdering vampires. Perhaps we can be friends."
Let's bond over our mutual murdering.
So, the death brings them together. They learn
Beautiful.
how to fight together. Vigilante justice at its finest. So they get better. Things get better. It just took them some time to get there. Then I think it's really interesting. So we find out, like, eventually that Araya, no, that Rain and Misha used to be human, which is why they act so different from the other vampires, where those other vampires are very, like, serious and pretty much lacking in humanity. Rain and Misha are not like that at all. They're like fun, and they still have zest and zeal for life. And Rain talks about not having any humanity, but I think he's kind of still got some of humanity, right?
He says at one point, he says, "Don't be so quick to throw away your humanity. You might find you miss it once it's gone." And that's so sad. And I think that's when we first find out that he was turned. Maybe. And he says this. And he's been, I really don't know how old he is. He's got to be at least 200, maybe 300.
Yeah, he's at least, well, Vincent's been the king for 200, so he's at least 200.
Right. He's at least 200. So he still misses his humanity. And he also can't taste food properly, which that's a real bummer.
But he still, like, does things to kind of get him, and it's really interesting because he is able to interact pretty comfortably around humans despite not being one, and Araya just feels terribly uncomfortable around them. It doesn't feel natural to her, which I think is interesting. They go to a bar at one point, and she's like, "What? This is awkward." And he's just vibing,
Just drinking the terrible, terrible beer, enjoying the atmosphere of the fine establishment.
In anticipate, like, before the third trial, there's that attack on the Moon Palace. Misha gets hurt, which I guess I still don't fully understand what happened there. So, like, she was praying to what the deity that provided her with her fire magic, Atroxus, I think is his name. And she says that he didn't come and she got attacked or ha I don't know if she got harmed because he didn't show up or the attack was from other people, so it's not like she summoned demons or things like that. But I don't like, so the question is like, why didn't he show up for her in that moment? Was it what they talked about, which is that she just used it until she used it up, basically, or
Yeah, because the fire power that she has isn't night fire,
yeah.
right? It's different because she was a priestess, or
Yeah.
right? She was a
Yeah,
priestess,
she's
so she had
a
that.
priestess.
And I think Rain said something along the line was he wasn't gonna let, like, the god wasn't gonna let, Nyaxia's child, I guess, or keep using his power.
Yeah.
And of course, God's being God, that would be the time that he pulls out, I guess,
Sure.
of
That
it.
is how they tend to do things, the
Yes.
least convenient times.
And it sounds like that the Blood Kingdom, right? They framed the Rishans for the
Yeah.
attack, starting war
Yeah.
again.
Yeah. So, Misha, is too wounded to be in the third trial. Then Jesmyn, who is Vincent's general, shows up and takes Rain away. Surely to be tortured. It's just one bad thing after the other. And Riot manages to get Misha removed from the thing after her request to be pardoned is denied. So there is that. And then she meets with Vincent and is like, please don't murder him or break him because I still need like a partner. But he comes back and he is quite injured.
Just to stitch him up. Ugh.
Yeah. At one point she says she's pretty sure she can see muscle. That's pretty bad.
That's deep. I was
Not
gonna say,
good.
were they trying to force his wings out? Because, because he said this is what happened when I wouldn't take my wings out.
Yeah. So imagine what they would have done to his wings.
Exactly. Good thing I
Terrible.
didn't take
They
my
might have
wings.
plucked him like a chicken.
I know that's terrible and sad, but that was just a funny image. Because now I'm imagining some like buff guy, right, with plucked wings by.
Sad. I don't know how wings work. Do feathers grow back? Is that how that works? Okay. I mean, they would grow back, but the in-between would be uncomfortable. We get some nice teamwork in the third trial. They both manage to make it out alive. We get to the fourth trial. And it's pretty rough.
Yep, that is where things really start to go downhill.
Yeah. So Araya, again, just it's really good to be friends with a human because she realizes that the animals are poisoned. So she finds Rain, who is super hungry by this point because Nyaxia started starving them. And so she finds Rain and it's like, look, you can't eat the animals, you're gonna die. He feeds from her. It's super hot. But they do like the teamwork thing again to escape this like toxic mist thing. And it's as they're doing this that they realize that Salonae, which is Araya's home and is home to a bunch of Rishan folks, has been destroyed.
Like completely wiped out.
Yeah.
This is not like, oh, maybe there are some survivors under the rubble.
No.
No.
Just leveled, right? And so we see like some really tough things for both of them because like Rain is furious and sad at the loss of life. She makes a comment to her about how terrible her dad is, and she is, you know, like kind of realizing some things about her dad too. Which is really tough because when she started this journey, the goal was to get to the point where she could eventually go back to this town and maybe find any survivors in her family.
Mm-hmm. And her dad knew that too.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so there's no possibility of that now because there's no one left. Mm-hmm. And so we really start to see some of the difficulty in the position that she's in, because she's had some moments up to this point where she's really questioned, like she's kind of thought some questioning things maybe about Vincent, but this she really can't ignore.
Yeah,
that her father does terrible things.
And in a way it's like she knew that he did terrible things, but it's totally different seeing it, because he does say after that attack on the palace, he says, "I'll spare no one. I will not spare your wives or your children." And he hadn't, right? So yeah. And the rest of the quote is Vincent had killed them all. And that's mm-hmm. tough. I mean, like, you know logically that he's killed people, right? She knows
right.
logically. He's done some bad things. But to see it firsthand. Mm-hmm. And then the real kicker to me, because when I first read this, I was like, oh, damn. When she realizes that the human district is basically just like a human farm,
mm-hmm.
the supply of humans and blood for the vampires.
Yeah.
That's tough. And I'm like, when she had that realization the first time I read, I was like, oh, man.
Yeah.
Man.
Yeah. It's a lot of hard things for her to confront.
Mm-hmm.
She does. They get back after the fourth trial. They get back to the Moon Palace, and she's feeling pretty triggered, right? Because it's not like the opportunity for her to ever find out about any of her other family members is gone now too. And so she goes to the palace. She goes to her home and confronts Vincent. And it's just such a bizarre type of scene, because she knows he's done terrible things, but he's also like the only person that she's ever really loved or been able to depend on or trusted. And so we have these two difficult things that we're looking at. And so when she confronts Vincent, he basically drags her to this room where humans are being fed from, just as like a food source. They've been tied down. They're actively dying. Multiple people are feeding on them. And he shows this to her, like she wouldn't be bothered by it. Right?
He doesn't.
So I think... Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, he says it when he does it, like he basically drags her there. And because she says, it could have been me, right?
Yeah.
She's like, that could have been me. And so he says, it never would have been you. And he takes her over there and she's like, because you wouldn't let that happen. Like you would fight back or whatever. Yeah. Right? But it's like, that's don't show her that.
Yeah, don't show her that. But also she would fight back because she's been raised by a warrior king.
Yeah. If she had just been raised, she'd been raised.
Just by other humans who exist to be cattle, basically, for other vampires. Circumstances would be different.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, also terrible thing to show your kid. But also we have just this really sharp realization that he doesn't know her like he thinks he knows her.
Mm-hmm.
Because she hasn't really been able to be herself, like not truly be herself. So she hasn't been able to share like the hatred and the resentment that she has for vampires because of the way that she's been raised and her vigilante justice with saving the humans. And we don't get the impression that he would be impressed or care about that, because he sees them as just a food source.
But you're the exception.
Yeah.
The thing. I was never a fan of that.
Yeah. You're special.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a fan of that either. It comes up again later in the book.
Her relationship with Rain, though, real cute.
Oh, yeah.
Real sweet. Real intense.
Oh, yeah. I mean, after the fourth trial, she comes back to the Moon Palace and was like, yeah, my daddy sucks. Let's bone.
Mm-hmm.
And they do for a whole chapter. And I really appreciated it, because we got like very little romantic lead up to this moment. But when we got it, boy, it was like night fire. It was super hot. Scald the skin off of your face and turn your bones into porcelain hot.
It was so good. But I mean, even leading up to this, yeah. It was like they had some really sweet moments together, right?
Yeah.
One of the things he says to her is, I've seen some fucking travesties, but one of the biggest is that anyone taught you that you should become anything other than exactly what you are. And she notices that he likes watching the sunrise or sunset or whatever, and sets up a mirror system so he can watch it. That's just so sweet.
It is very thoughtful. They do have some cute moments like that. And I love that quote that you just read. I think it's so, oh, just everything that she needs to hear. Their sex scene is, goodness. This is really good.
Yeah.
There are so many things that I enjoyed about this scene, right? So part of it is just that Rain is so reassuring to Uriah. He gives her control. He lets her know that she has control. He makes her feel safe. He gives her the ability to take as much time as she wants or needs for anything and doesn't pressure her into doing anything. He really lets her take the lead, which I love. The oral sex scenes in this book are so good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I like that he is aware of, so I don't think we talked about this yet. So she was her first love, right? I guess, or her first boyfriend. She had sex with him and he lost control and started feeding on her.
Yeah.
And I just like that he picked up on that trepidation, right? And he had noticed before too, I guess, the bite marks and stuff in her neck as well. And so he lets her have like complete control over that, making sure that she felt comfortable so that, you know, and she was in charge there.
Yeah.
Liked seeing that. And I liked his being like in tune to her.
Yeah.
Even without her having to say.
Yeah.
Say why, which I think would be really hard for her to articulate or to just say, because it's admitting like another form of weakness, maybe.
Yeah.
But yeah. It was hot.
It was really hot. After they do the oral sex, she pulls him to the ground and mounts him.
Yes.
And he like helps her like with the thrusting and the movement and the grinding. And it was just, I think he still has pants on. Like, it's just so good.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And it's very good. I like that part he says, I at least put you on the bed or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's not a lot of smut in the story, but what we get is extensive.
Yeah, lasted and a while.
It was like a whole chapter, and it was really well written. So, points. We give points for that.
Mm-hmm.
I will take one really great sex scene over three mediocre sex scenes.
I agree.
But then we get to the day of the last scene and they're both like, yep, we just can't stop fighting. One of us is going to die. We just power through it, right?
Mm-hmm.
They get to the fifth one and this is the one where all of the corpses have been, you know, recycled for the final. So Ibrahim has kind of appeared through this entire story as a character who is definitely the underdog. He fought despite being disabled by his parents before this even started and made it somehow all the way to the end. And he comes out of his thing and is immediately confronted by Uriah. They're going to have to fight it out. And the crowd starts to boo him and he, like, she can see him thinking about, like, he's just going to give up, right? So I love that she pushes him to fight. I love that she pushes him to like power through instead of dying in like shame in front of all of these terrible people who are ultimately going to die anyway, really. I love that he gets this kind of resolution in the story.
Me too. She says, if you give me a fair fight, I'll give you a fair death.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I knew at the beginning that he had to die. But it was still kind of sad. Also, I think he tried to kill her in that first trial, didn't he?
You know, I don't remember if he tried to kill her in the first one. I think he did another at another point, maybe.
I don't remember using his body to put it on, like, in the maze trial. Was that trial number two?
Oh, yeah, it was the second one. That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. He tried to kill her in that one. I felt like that storyline got wrapped up really well. I appreciated his ending.
Yeah.
And she has this terrible fight with Angelica. Some, like, weird eye stuff happens that she's not really sure what's going on. Angelica dies.
Mm-hmm.
Really throws the match. And then she has to fight Rain, which was pretty brutal. The fight scenes were, you know, in the last book that we read, the complaint was like that the fight scenes weren't like really long or involved with our main characters.
Mm-hmm.
This is not that book.
Not at all.
Because the fight scenes are pretty extensive. They were long.
Yeah. And they were, well, I thought they were good. You know,
I thought they were good too. Yeah. I liked them. So she's like fighting death or fighting Rain. They're doing magic against each other. It's rough. I was not expecting him to die.
Yeah.
It was surprised. Well, in part because I read ahead. I jumped ahead to the end of the story to see what was going to happen. And so I knew that he was still alive at the end of the book. And so then we get to this part where he's like on the ground with her like knife or her sword at his chest. And he's like helping her stab him to death. And I was like, what the fuck? Because he's alive in this part of the book. What's happening right now? Yeah. So, and then, it was just a lot. There's a lot that happened at the end of this story.
Yes. So my first read, I did not read ahead or anything. So I thought he was dead. And was very concerned.
Do you remember how you felt?
Yeah. I actually took, I apparently at some point halfway through this book decided I was going to recommend it for the podcast because I started taking notes in it.
Oh, nice. Okay.
So I made myself.
I do that too. Yeah.
Yeah. So I remember being like, holy shit. Right. He died. And I was just gonna, you know, fix. And then, as we know, he dies. Nyaxia shows up and asks for her wish. And she wishes that Rain had actually won. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember on my first read being like, why not just wish for him to be back to life? Not the whole winning thing, because now he gets a wish too.
Yeah.
But whatever. I remember being somewhat disappointed that she didn't make a grab for power. That's not the right term. But maybe be a little bit more selfish in her wish.
Yeah, so I felt that.
Mm-hmm.
I was super on board with how this book was going until I got to this part and then realized that Oriah basically gave up on her chance at power and change for humanity, for love, for a man who is great. Rain is great, but definitely would not have done the same thing for her.
Mm-hmm.
And I just did not love that. Why does the woman always have to give up her power? Like, I want a story where the roles are reversed, where the man gives up his power for the woman. Because of love. Because the man is just so fucking in love.
He gives it all up.
He gives it all up so that the woman can do her thing. Where is that story?
You must have read a book like that. No? It must be out there. We'll find it one day.
Yeah. Okay. Well, maybe one of us can write it if we can't find it. It'll be just like this, but with the roles reversed. Or, hey, listeners, if you know this story, send it our way, because I'm tired of women always giving up their power.
So I found this a really interesting contrast. So earlier in the book, right, Oriah is thinking about Nyaxia and says, maybe the Pantheon took her lover, but Nyaxia also took back her own power. And so when I had gotten to the end the first time, I didn't have that in mind. I reread it and I had that in mind. And I was like, Oh, it's kind of like a reversal thing here. Like, Nyxia's gone through the same thing, but instead of getting her husband or her lover back, right, she instead went for power.
Yeah.
So we kind of have that story out there.
Yeah. Maybe that's what's going to happen in the next book.
Yeah. Maybe. I don't know.
It is great. I'd support it. Yeah, it is dual point of view. I saw that.
Yeah. So that'll be good. I'd like to be in his head, see what he's thinking. But yes, the ending was intense, I guess. So she makes her wish that he won the tournament.
Mm-hmm.
He comes back to life and is like, what did you do?
Yeah.
And then I keep calling it wish. I know it's like they say gift in it, but it's a wish.
It's a wish.
Like, right? That he can, right, like, reclaim the throne, I guess, of the...
Yeah, the role of the heir of the Rishon Empire.
Yes. Yeah. That. And then, like, kills her dad.
Yep, straight up murders him right in front of her face.
Yeah, and he, like, is kind of, like, sorry, but also he kind of had to do it.
Yeah.
So
I think he tells her to look away at one point, and she's just, like, there, screaming and on fire.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I feel like this is where maybe some communication about some things beforehand would have been helpful, right? But that didn't happen. So, you know, Arya feels tremendously betrayed. She says about Rhaen, I had chosen him over my own father, over my own power. And now Vincent was dead. And the Hiage has been overthrown. And the fucking House of Blood was in Sifrenage, which is their kingdom, basically. Kind of not great.
I pondered on this for a while, right? Because she does say in the book that Rhaen had people to save. Mine were gone. Who deserved this more, right? Obviously, hindsight is 20/20. But I think if we look at kind of where she is in that moment where she makes that wish, right?
Yeah.
I mean, she's in a bad place. She just found out her father's terrible. One of the reasons that he wanted to heart bond with her was so that she couldn't overthrow him. Mm-hmm. He grabbed her hard enough to bruise her, forced her to see some really terrible things, slaughtered 500,000 people in her hometown, essentially. Mm-hmm. She discovered that the human district that she just really wanted to protect was only existed for vampires. And all of her hope at finding blood relatives is gone. So I felt like at that moment, probably the really only tangible thing she had was Rhaen. And she's under the impression when she does say this that, like, yeah, he's gonna save his people. Didn't really think through maybe exactly what that meant would happen. Because I mean, let's say she made the wish to be heart bonded, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, she was obviously feeling conflicted about Vincent, right? Yeah. Does she want to be heart bonded to him? No, like, you know, so what? Yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, that kind of highlights how disconnected she feels from, like, humans, because those are still her people, because she's a human person. She could have made a wish to, like, liberate the humans. Okay. I guess I still just don't like it.
I would have liked to see this go another route, but
yeah.
That's
we also kind of have Rhaen explain a little bit later that he, like, kind of threw the tournament and helped Arya kill him because she was special.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, kind of don't love that.
No.
Vincent's death was really terrible and sad.
It was.
I felt really bad for her and for him. I loved the image that the author writes of her guarding his body and just, like, raging and both of them wrapped in flame.
Mm-hmm.
He tells her that he loves her. Finally, at the end, and that she wasn't a mistake, and that he had made a bunch of mistakes in the end, but she was not one of them. It was just so sad.
Mm-hmm.
But also, like, what has he been doing for the last, I don't know, 3 months or so? 2 months? However long they've been in this competition. Because every time he shows up throughout the story, he looks like more and more harried, right? Mm-hmm. And things are real chaotic in the castle when Uriah shows up to confront him. So, like, what's been going on? What are the mistakes he's been making? What's happening?
Yeah.
I want to know.
Maybe we'll find out in the next book.
Maybe so. Oh, but also, he's her dad for real?
Okay, yes. Him being her actual father and her being... I don't understand how she didn't know she was half vampire. I also still will never understand how vampires supposedly procreate, but...
Yeah, I don't... The math doesn't math on that one. You know?
Yeah, I know.
How do you have sperm and ova if you're dead? But maybe they're not actually dead. These, I guess, because this isn't Twilight, so these vampires can be whatever they want to be, really, I guess.
Yeah. They're also born vampires.
Yeah.
So they're, yeah.
Maybe we're not looking at, like, traditional vampires, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. So she's the heir.
Yes.
To the Kiage vampire, like, the kingdom. The shock.
Mm-hmm.
He says, as Vincent's dying, he says, like, I was going to tell you. And you're like, what were you going to tell her? Apparently, he's going to tell her that he was actually her dad the whole time.
I don't understand why he didn't tell her that to begin with.
I don't understand why he didn't do that either. Also, how did he, like, find her?
I don't know.
Like, what?
Who does bring it up? I think it's Rain who says, why was, like, does bring that up. Like, why was he at that particular village, at that particular house, at that particular time?
Yeah.
Sort of thing.
Well, and Nyaxia makes a comment about her having his eyes, right?
Oh, so, I missed that. Really?
Yeah, they have the same eyes.
Hmm.
Yeah. I mean, I just feel like this would have been an important conversation to have, maybe before she ever got started on this journey.
Yeah. I mean, does that impact her lifespan?
I don't know.
This
it seems like it would.
Mm. You think she'd be... I don't want to say less human, but, like, exhibit some other something. Yeah,
vampire qualities.
Yeah. Maybe he didn't tell her because he was worried she would try to kill him and usurp him.
Maybe.
I guess. But it's not addressed in this book. Well, I guess the lifespan thing is really addressed. What exactly it means, like, that air mark, if you get... Are you get more power with it as well? Or is it just status?
I don't know if you get more power with it. I think, well, definitely status.
Yeah.
And then, of course, the only solution for keeping Uriah is alive is for Rain to marry her and to tell his people that he's going to rape her repeatedly.
Yep.
That's obviously the only way to do this.
Yeah. On my first read, I apparently highlighted that and put a bunch of angry emojis. So that's
why is it marriage? Like, the woman gives up her power and she has to get married. Why?
You're safe, Marissa, obviously.
I don't like it. At one point, Rain is talking to her and he's like, I'm gonna go get the priestess, like, immediately so that we can keep you alive.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, maybe I'll just die.
Just to spite it.
And I was thinking the exact same thing. Like, if it was me in this situation, I would definitely entertain that too. Maybe I'll just die.
That'll show him.
That'll show him. And then I just thought, like, what's wrong with me? And why do I just really like the idea of men suffering because of their own ridiculousness so much?
I love that. Well, then I'll just die to spite you. Oh, okay. Well, kind of circling back and going back, we didn't talk too much about Rain's backstory here.
So he was found by the guy who was actually the Rishan King at the time before Vincent overthrew them. And it sounded like this guy was really terrible and enjoyed torturing and maybe sexually assaulting him. Which is, it seems, part of why he's so in tune with Oriah's history.
Mm-hmm.
And so he talks about being a slave to this king and the love that he had for Nesanin, who was the king's queen at the time. And it was pretty sad. And how he ended up betraying them to Vincent.
That was like the big twist to that.
That was the big twist. It was unexpected.
Mm-hmm.
I really enjoyed that as a twist. So he's carried around this like guilt, it sounds like, and shame for the last 200 years, because obviously turning over his kingdom to Vincent did not have a great impact on the Rashan.
Nope.
Ended up being pretty terrible for him. Which makes me wonder how he thinks being the king is going to work out when everybody's going to hate him.
Yeah. So
for betraying their king.
Yep. So this is like, yeah. So that's sort of where we run into a big wall, I guess. Yeah. So he's definitely not going to have like Vincent's, you know, loyal people on his side. He's got the Blood Kingdom, which, mm-hmm. all right. Sure, they apparently suck, but his own people, he's not, well, according to what's her name, Jesmyne,
yeah,
there are plenty of people who don't forget that he like basically abandoned them,
yeah, right?
Overthrew the king, whatever, all of that, so they're not going to want to bow to him, so he's going to have a tough time,
right?
And he's also marrying Vincent's daughter, which probably some of his people will disagree with, I would think.
Yeah.
That might cause some tension there. But yeah, I don't know. I can't tell if he's also kind of being like really idealistic, because he mentions building like a whole new world at one point. And it's like, okay, I really hope they get there. I hope that truly is his intention, that he and Oriah can work together to make a better world for vampires and humans alike. But we'll see.
We'll see.
We'll see.
I don't know what kind of deal he made with the Blood Kingdom, because he certainly made some kind of deal with them. And
I'm sure he also made deals with other people too.
Yeah. Like,
it can't be just him.
No. I don't understand why the Blood Kingdom is, or the Bloodborne, are so interested in taking over like the Night. Why are they in this kingdom? Because they've got this pretty sketchy curse because of Nyaxia. So are we trying to break the curse? Because every curse can be broken. So I really feel like Oriah needs to be asking more questions about the deal that Rain made with Septimus, because it sounds like that could be a problem.
I hope that she pushes back and questions him on like everything in the next book, because oh my gosh, when she like kind of comes to and he's like, well, I never lied to you.
Oh yeah,
okay, dude, let's just,
that was so good that those were like the first words out of his mouth, and he's like, I never lied to you, and she was like, okay, you just selectively chose to tell me what you wanted to, still lying. Yeah. I agree. Well, listen, I mean, look, our girl has worked too hard to stay alive up to this point to let her kingdom just be overrun by these random bloodborne people and this, I don't know, toolbox who feels bad because he betrayed his kingdom 200 years ago. Like, I love a love story, but I feel like that only gets us so far sometimes. And here's something I would not mind at all. Jesmyne, like, ma'am, can I call you mother? Like, I love you. She shows off her scar in her chest. I don't know what happened there, but she shows up at Uriah's window like, you're a queen now, and we're loyal to you. And if you want us to fight, we will, like, right up to the death. It will be bad, but we'll do it because you're the queen, and I'm loyal to the heir, not just to your dad, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, what if,
what if they get
Oriah together? Yeah, and Jesmyne. How about that?
Yeah, team up, have two queens rule the...
Two queens, two people who seem to make pretty logical, solid decisions most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I hope we see more of Jasmine in the next book, but I don't know how much we'll see.
Yeah, I'm not really sure.
Like, he's being really insistent, like, oh, you're not a prisoner here, but, like, there are wards up and spells everywhere, so she can't get out. So, who's... You know, so I don't know how she'd coordinate, you know, how often she'd be able to get to meet with Jasmine or any of her other people.
Yeah. All right, let's wrap this puppy up. Favorite quotes.
Yes. So I picked one that this is Vincent saying this to Oriah. He says, "Do you want to change this world, little serpent? Then climb your cage until you are so high no one can catch you. Break its bars and make them your weapons." And I love that imagery, and I love the idea of turning what you're imprisoned by, or what your weakness may be, your prison, whatever, into your strength and into your weapon.
Yeah, it's a good one. It's a nice image.
Mm-hmm.
I like this quote that Rain says to Oriah. He says, "The difference between nothing mattering and one thing mattering is a big one." And I just think it speaks really nicely to the importance of hope and how devastating hopelessness can be, but how even just having one thing matter to you can have such a tremendous impact.
Yep.
Yeah. I liked it. Okay. Well, that wraps up The Serpent and the Wings of Night by Carissa Broadbent. Join us next time. We'll be discussing the second book in this series. So that will be The Ashes and the Star-Cursed King by, again, Carissa Broadbent. Thanks for listening. Thank you for listening to Literary Quest. We hope you enjoyed our episode. If you'd like to follow us on social media, we can be found at Literary Quest Podcast on Instagram or Facebook. You're also welcome to share your thoughts and ideas with us via email at literaryquestpodcast@gmail.com. Thanks again.